Welcome to Roundhouse Roulette, a Walker, Texas Ranger podcast. Each week we recap and review one of the 200 existing Walker, Texas Ranger episodes randomly selected by Roundhouse Roulette. I'm Evan Dalton, here with my brother Adam.
What's up?
And our podcast's own little visitor, Mr. Bob Leahy.
Hey, how's it going?
I've been better, but, you know, we'll get into that. We'd like to thank you all for joining us as we revisit Chuck Norris's 1990s Indigenous people-themed docudrama on AIDS. Today, we'll be recapping and reviewing the continuation of the Lucas saga, which is Season 6, Episode 4, Lucas Part 2, regarding Walker's young ward, played by Haley Joel Osment. But before we saddle up our horses, head on down to the local river and run into a strange old man in sneakers, join us as we pull up a stool at CD's Bar and Grill. Fancy meeting you guys here.
Yeah, man. After watching that episode, I'm just glad I survived.
It's not how you meet your end. It's what you do with your life that really matters.
I'm really looking forward to marinating on that for an hour with you guys here.
Yeah.
Yep.
Maybe we should start drinking.
Yeah. Speaking of marinade, this week CD is serving us up an elaborate metaphor, which is a New England pale ale from Burlington Beer Company in Williston, Vermont, not Burlington.
Yeah. So
figure that one out.
Oh, I gotcha. All right.
We're a judgment-free zone here until we open the can, at least. According to the bar and grill menu here, elaborate metaphor is a New England-style pale ale. It is brewed with Citra and Amarillo hops. It's also brewed with barley, flaked oats, wheat, and raw wheat. Flavors and aromas include fresh citrus zest, passion fruit, honeydew melon, and floral wildflowers.
It sounds like they went to like a Quaker grocery store and bought all the ingredients.
It's a co-op, dude. It's Vermont. All right. It's a co-op.
Aren't wildflowers floral no matter what?
Yep.
Okay. Just checking. Let's see if it's a floral pour.
All right. Let's pop this sucker. Yeah, I think when CD was choosing this beer, he pretty much chose it on the name Elaborate Metaphor, because in the last episode, Walker was equating having AIDS with being half white, half Native American. And if there ever was an elaborate metaphor, I think that would be it.
Yeah, I'll say.
But let's see how that tastes, that elaborate metaphor.
A lot of foam in mine.
Oh, we all did it. Okay.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for mine to subside here.
I like this one.
It's definitely citrusy. I get more of the passion fruit from smelling it. Sorry. The head, right?
Yeah.
I'm really a connoisseur here.
Maybe we should stick to Walker, you know.
I feel more at home with that, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this is an interesting array of flavors, and it definitely has a bite to it that we'll keep you awake, so I think we're going to be on our toes this podcast. Maybe we can move on to some other stuff here. A lot of times when I'm tagging the celebrities in our Walkerstrations, when I'm posting them up on social media, I'll stumble on to some random things. And this first item here is something I stumbled onto on Instagram when I was attempting to see if there's a profile to tag for Jordan Brower, who was one of the kids in Chuck Norris's movie Forest Warrior, which we recently did a podcast on. If you listen to that podcast, you might recall we commented on his home improvement hair. I want to preface this with, guys, I wasn't just looking for pictures of this kid, okay?
Right, okay.
But you are a follower of Teen Stars Forever pinups?
You are now.
Well, I mean, you know, I guess this is like a Instagram account that follows teen stars, and they put up a picture of Jordan Brower from Teen Beat magazine. And Bob, what are they saying about it, man?
Let's see, he was in a movie with Jonathan Taylor Thomas. He was on the TV show Teen Angel, and then he appeared in the movie Speedway Junkie. Missing some pretty important details there.
But the notable detail is, dude, he has the home improvement hair.
Oh, yeah.
And he was also in a movie with Jonathan Taylor Thomas, who was ground zero for Home Improvement here.
Have we looked up the film Speedway Junkie?
Now's the time.
All right, I'm doing it. It's a 1999 American crime drama film written and directed by Nicholas Perry, starring Jesse Bradford, Jordan Brower, JTT, and Daryl Hannah.
Oh.
The film stars Jesse Bradford as Johnny, a young man with dreams of becoming a stock car racer. After he loses all his money and possessions in Las Vegas, we can see how that would happen, he drifts into the world of hustling in the hope of making enough money to travel to Charlotte, North Carolina to join the car racing industry. He meets Eric, Jordan Brower, a gay hustler who finds himself falling for Johnny. Jonathan Taylor Thomas also stars as Steve, a bisexual hustler, and Daryl Hannah plays Veronica, a former showgirl and prostitute who has served as a surrogate mother figure for Eric since his own mother died.
She's got a heart of gold.
Wow, Jesus. A lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Here's your elaborate metaphor. Other than Veronica, the only thing Eric has to remind him of his mother is a silver dollar she gave him that he carries for good luck.
Nice. Oh,
can I just say it? Oh, jeez.
Oh.
We were confusing this kid, Jordan Brower, as the older brother on Home Improvement. While in my teen star exploration on Instagram, I went down quite a rabbit hole, and I was looking at the hashtag Jordan Brower. I promise that's the only hashtag I was looking at when I was trying to find this stuff. When I was trying to tag him in that image, all these things came up.
You're really trying to convince us of this.
I didn't order any Teen Beat magazines. I didn't do any of that. I'm just going to put that out there now.
You didn't have to. You already had them.
Yeah.
But maybe, Evan, you can describe what we have here.
I'd rather not. I just feel wrong reading this. This is a clipping of Blake and Zach and Jordan. And that would be Zachary Ty Bryan, who is the older brother from Home Improvement, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got Jordan Brower on the same page. And Blake Heron, who, no idea. This is from Teen Magazine. From 1998. So around the time that Forest Warrior came out, really.
Yeah, and this is the 25 cutest guys ever, exclamation point. These guys might not be at the top, but they're in the running. And at the top is Zachary Ty Bryan, the older brother from Home Improvement, who we were getting confused with Jordan Brower, who is right below him. Bob, do you want to fill us in on Jordan Brower?
Blonde, hazel-eyed, and to die for. That's got to be Jordan Brower, who rocks your world every Friday night in the ABC comedy Teen Angel. Never heard of that.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go look that up now.
Wait, when did Forest Warrior actually come out?
On 96.
Yeah, so this is 2 years after, and they're basically listing off his resume. They don't include Forest Warrior.
The Brower babe made his acting debut in the Disney movie The Big Green. Rent it!
How do you rent a movie?
Dude, you get on a Blockbuster and you ask if they have The Big Green and you cross your fingers that your best friend hasn't rented it.
Yeah, pretty much. He appeared on the short-lived TV show Social Studies before nabbing the role on Teen Angel's Wise Talking Jordan.
He's a real surfer dude who loves nothing more than spending his free time frolicking in the ocean near his Marina Del Rey home. And he's looking for an athletic, fun-loving girl to share his boogie board. Quote, I hate it when girls want to sit at home and watch TV, he says. The girl for me would be into surfing and hanging out at the beach.
And below that, all this is the post I found this on originally. It's a Blake Heron Forever Instagram page. So someone just obsessed with that teen star. And they added the hashtag Jordan Brower. So that's how I found all this. Seriously, guys. Seriously, that's how I found it. But I want to know, wouldn't you be interested in what they're doing now? Not like their Teen Beat magazine page?
Maybe they know what they're doing now and it's not as interesting as what they did,
right?
You know, 20-some-odd years ago.
He's currently working at a Jiffy Lube.
Actually, I'm going to be honest. I looked all three of these guys up on Wikipedia because I was curious.
You are out of control, dude.
Jordan Brower is the guy who wasn't affected the most from Hollywood.
I'm not surprised by that. He was in like three things.
Blake Heron unfortunately overdosed, and Zachary Ty Bryan has been in a number of domestic disputes.
He looks like he would be.
In Home Improvement, it wasn't like home perfection. It was Home Improvement. We're trying to improve something there. There was a problem there.
Per usual, Adam has dug way too deep into a wormhole, and somehow he drug both of us in, Bob.
Yeah, I mean, getting pulled into it. Yeah.
The next thing that's going to happen, and he's probably already done it.
All right, Jordan, are you ready to Skype in?
He's photoshopped our faces onto this magazine.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I think maybe we need to redo this page, the three of us, for the podcast. Is that what you're saying, Evan?
I'm surprised it took you this long to get to that. I was expecting you to have made it already. You're that crazy.
No. I've been busy on some other stuff here. Okay, well, maybe we should move on to the socials here. In our second mini-sode a week or so ago, we talked about Bob's backstory, which is when he worked at the Mountain T-Shirt Company, which is kind of like a earthed-out, tie-dyed T-shirt company with crazy wizards and eagles and American flags and stuff screen-printed on it. So I actually found a picture of Evan wearing his unicorn T-shirt.
It's a good one. Looks very well-worn, too. Looks like you've had it for a while.
I still have it. It's one of my most treasured finds.
And somebody reached out to us there, Evan. Who was it?
Someone who I think maybe we should assume that it's people from the Mountain.
Official Mountain Instagram account.
And they approve of us wearing some Mountain swag. Adam, of course, has continued to try to get more of a rise out of them.
Yep, they said magical threads. Magical threads indeed. Good luck with your podcast, and thank you for being some of the most awesome hashtag Mountain Crew members. I also put up a picture of Sarah in her Mountain T-shirt playing Magic the Gathering, and they stole it and added it to their Instagram stories with the hashtag Mountain Crew. But this might be the best post, is the third one. Evan, you want to check that one out?
I guess they've reposted. I don't know what yeah, this exactly. means. They retweeted us. Re-insted us?
It's tweeted. They retweeted your picture on the main Mountain T-Shirts account with your unicorn T-shirt and said, Mountain Crew found unicorn.
I guess that's a rare shirt.
Maybe it's time to check the mailbag here. We got an email from Karen Bardunas. How do you say that last
Bardunas?
Name? Yeah, maybe. And she says, hey, I just found out about your podcast. Very cool. I ran the makeup department for the first 4 of 8 seasons.
All right.
Glad you all are paying homage to the show, which always holds a place in my heart. So that's cool to hear from another person who's worked on the show. And
I mean, did you reach out to this person, or did they just find us?
They just reached out to us unsolicited from our website.
All right.
Wow. So someone's been to our website.
Exactly. We'll see. Yeah, maybe we'll be able to get her on the show to talk about, well, really what I'm most interested in is confirmation of Chuck Norris's real hair color. And I would be willing to bet that she'd be able to talk about that subject pretty well. But yeah, thanks so much, Karen, for reaching out. That's all I've got for news and the mailbag this week.
Well, that works out because we've got a bit to cover this week. Hit that pause button if you don't want any more spoilers, and watch Season 6, Episode 4, Lucas, Part 2, and come right on back to us. Welcome back. Let's dig into this beast. This episode originally aired on October 19th, 1997, and it opens with a recap of last episode.
That it does, and if you didn't listen to last week's podcast,
shame on you.
Yep.
No, I get it. I get it. It's cool.
Then you probably don't want to listen to this one either.
We'll save you some time.
Yeah.
We'll be back next week.
All right. Let's spin that wheel. Yeah. So pretty much Walker and Trivette and a tactical team are en route to bust this guy, Rafer Cobb, who, according to one of the FBI agents, is
always armed and always dangerous.
Nice. So they bust into his place and they're making drugs and all this stuff. And typical Walker bust, Rafer gets away with this woman. We don't know who she is. And they're scoping out the house. And Walker comes across a young boy portrayed by Haley Joel Osment in a closet. And it looks like he's been kept captive there. And they have food on a plate with a rat. There's feces smeared on the wall. And Walker says, "You're safe now. You're with a ranger."
Yeah, so basically Walker rescues this child from an abusive situation. Mm-hmm. And then they find out that the child has AIDS. And Walker takes care of the boy even more, rescues him from foster care because the kids were picking on him because he had AIDS. And in the meantime, Rafer Cobb and the boy's mother, the boy's name is Lucas, Lucas's mother, are trying to evade the law, but eventually the law catches up with them just in time for Lucas's mother to be reunited with Lucas and then die in dramatic fashion. Meanwhile, Rafer Cobb is wondering where the heck the code and key to his safety deposit box with $500,000 in it is, and he learns that Lucas's mother gave it to Lucas, and we don't know where it is. It's the great mystery thread that ties these episodes together beautifully.
Big old cliffhanger.
Yeah, and Lucas doesn't know he has AIDS. Walker hasn't found a way to tell him yet, and Lucas's mother tells Walker, "Take care of him." So essentially, Walker is Lucas's dad from now on and is going to be taxed with potentially telling him he has AIDS. We'll find out if he does that. They set up the bad guy, this really grisly bad guy, Rafer Cobb. It reminded me of the Special Olympics episode where they literally send Gary Busey, a crazed maniac, after a girl with Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. Now they're sending a crazed maniac after a cute little boy with AIDS.
Yep.
I'm like, oh no.
And I would say this guy, Brian James, as Adam said, he's very sort of weaselly.
And he's greasy.
I would have loved to have been there for the filming of some of these sequences. Because like both of these episodes, the last one and this one, have really trippy dream sequences.
Yeah.
And they're sort of zooming in and out of this guy's snaggle face. And he's going like, "Rawr,
ear." Yeah, they're like, "Throw it at the wall, Rafer Cobb. Yep. Go at it."
And that is exactly how this episode begins. It's another nightmare sequence where there are flashing strobes, orange lights. Lucas is trying to chase down his mother, and she's beckoning him to come to him. And just as he gets to her, she transmogrifies into Rafer Cobb, who's this snarling demon who's trying to chase him down. Bob, did this remind you of like a Guns N' Roses music video?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe November Rain.
Nice.
It's pretty trippy. Went on too long.
Yeah. And thankfully, though, Lucas wakes up and he runs to Walker because he's staying at Walker's house because essentially Walker's his guardian now. And Walker is kind of like, you know, "What's the matter?" And Lucas isn't really talking.
Yeah. You know, he's really trying to keep it on the low down, basically, what he's having nightmares about. He doesn't like talking about it because it's really scary. And so Walker doesn't know what to do. And the next morning, Walker has, you know, his domestic parenting moment with Alex. Alex, of course, is doing what any good housewife does at 7 o'clock in the morning, which is, you know, she's got a basket of green beans and she's just snapping the ends off. You know, she's cleaning those green beans first thing in the morning.
Trimming them up on the porch, a little porch action.
Little rocking chair action.
Oh, yeah.
And Walker comes out with his cup of coffee. He's like, "Oh, the nightmares just aren't ending." And she's like, "He really needs some help. He needs to talk about it." And I realize this is Walker's way of agreeing with people. He never admits that people are right. He just says, "You may be right." Notice that if we go back to all our episodes, I bet he says it in like half of the episodes we've done.
Yeah. And she's like, "You know, I know a great child psychologist." And you're thinking, dude, Walker's not going to go to no psychologist or send his kid to a psychologist. Mm. You know, the School of Hard Knocks is the psychologist.
Well, I mean, as soon as she starts talking about psychologists, Walker sense goes off.
Sure does.
I was wondering what was going on.
Oh yeah.
Camera starts to zoom in and he starts to look off in the distance and they're like, okay.
Well, you hear it, you hear like a wolf howl first, right, and then you hear a bald eagle call, and you're like, okay, something's happening now. Yeah. And it zooms in on his eyes, and he just sort of, they sort of glaze over, and then you get a shot of a robust man in Indian garb sitting behind a fire with a peace pipe, and it's like all pixelated and weird.
Yeah, so that's like his vision. And does it like pull back, and then like Alex is like, Walker? And he's like, yeah, you may be right, but I'm going to try a more primitive method first, as opposed to taking him to a psychologist. So
yeah, he doesn't need that book learning.
No, he needs that Native American learning.
I would like to say that the bird noises in this episode are on point. I think they shot on location and got the bird noises on location. When he's on the porch, they've got Indigo Bunting singing. And then later on, they've got Yellow-Bellied Sapsuckers. It's pretty good. And then the Bald Eagle is on point. I mean, I think they knocked it out of the park in this one.
I believe in my reading of Walker Texas Ranger articles and...
fan fiction.
Oh, yeah, fan fiction. But anything I've read about Walker Texas Ranger in the past year... that ranch house, I believe, is Chuck Norris's actual ranch house that they filmed that on for the series.
So that's the home of Seaforth Water.
Well, he probably had like 8 houses, so yeah. Hard to tell.
He's definitely moved since then, right? Because didn't we see one of his houses listed on Zillow?
Yeah. Dude, he probably owned like most of Dallas. But yeah, apparently that's his place. So.
Okay. We can only interpret his Walker sense to mean that he's going to be taking Lucas back to the reservation. And that's exactly what they do. They get the good old send-off and, you know, a little bit of exposition. CD's all like, well, I got the termites at my house, so thanks so much for letting me stay at your house.
Right. That whole line was, like, justifying his presence in the episode.
Just trying to explain why he's there. Yep. Yeah. And, yeah, so they've got the horse trailer, and, you know, Walker's got his horses, and he's also got Lucas's horse named Little Ranger, and they head off. And just as they head off, we see this ridiculous shot of a bush and Rafer Cobb's head behind it, and Rafer Cobb's just creeping around Walker's house.
Yeah, so Rafer Cobb, again, is the person who was keeping Lucas captive and had his mother captive as well. I mean, they didn't spare any time. They're just like, well, let's just pop him up here at the ranch. He's already there, and we'll put him behind a bush.
And we get a classic season 6 transition between scenes, which is a jarring digital zoom with a swooshing sound. You know, they're going off to the reservation, and they use this as more of an opportunity to talk about young Walker's upbringing, which they did a lot of in the last episode. They do a little bit less in this episode, but still too much. And basically, they talk about how Walker got his Uncle Ray, who was sort of took him in after Walker's parents were murdered, is basically trying to teach him to be a Native American, and not only in body, but also in spirit. And so he took him to see White Eagle, who was the medicine man who lived off in the woods. And Walker learned many life lessons from White Eagle.
Supposedly.
So he says, yeah. Basically, he learns how to control his fear, which might explain Chuck Norris's acting.
Oh, yeah. Maybe they're justifying why he doesn't react to anything. And he's not afraid of anything either. I mean, that's why.
He's learned to control his fear.
Yeah. I mean.
So on the reservation, they meet Sam Coyote. And they meet Lucas, whom they call the Little Visitor.
Yep. And Sam Coyote is in a number of other episodes of Walker. He's, I guess... someone who's around Walker's age who grew up with Walker on the reservation and is now maybe like the deputy or one of the law enforcement people on the reservation.
So it seems like maybe Walker's staying with them. Maybe Walker and Lucas are staying with Sam Coyote. You know, there's a night where Walker's in turmoil on the Sam Coyote's front porch and Sam comes out and is like, what's troubling you? And Walker's all like, well, Lucas still doesn't know he has AIDS. Like, what?
And let's stop this here. This episode right here is, I mean, this is, we might just get canceled with this episode. AIDS is terrible. We're just going to put that out there. It's also dealt with a little ham-handed here in this episode, and we're going to have to dig into that.
Oh, yeah, it's ridiculous. So, you know, Sam's like, well, he still doesn't know. And Walker's like, he describes Lucas like that woman would describe her dog. He's such a good boy. With a big heart.
Yeah, I know. And again, Haley Joel Osment does an excellent job in this episode. He does sell everything he does.
He's really good.
Yeah.
So, you know, Walker's like, well, I just don't know when I'm going to tell him. And Sam Coyote's like, well, I used to know someone, he's applying it with Walker, that when they needed to make a decision, they'd just go for a run. And Walker's like, all right. And so he just goes running. And, yeah. You know, it's a Walker run, so it's like a brisk jog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and he's in like dad jeans and a black t-shirt, so.
And it's by moonlight.
Yeah, there's lots of voiceovers, but then at the end, Walker's like covered in sweat, and he's like just kneeling and very painfully says, why? Why?
And he's like, why do you have to take poor Lucas? He's so young. He doesn't deserve to die. He just lost his mother, and he's been through this horrible trauma.
And I have to tell him he has AIDS.
Right.
Why do I have to tell him
he has AIDS?
I know. You know. Just have me hit somebody. I can hit somebody, but yeah, I probably shouldn't hit Lucas. Okay.
So meanwhile, back at the Walker's Ranch, what's happening, Bob?
Rafer Cobb, RC, is he's snooping around. And when Walker left, CD was going to be staying at the ranch. So CD is staying there, but CD's passed out on the couch. And RC's rummaging through the rooms looking for, you know, it was like a key to a safety deposit box or something.
Yeah. Yeah, and we didn't see Lucas with any physical objects. It's worth noting, you know, like a key or anything in the previous episode. So I was kind of wondering the whole episode, where is he keeping this thing?
Yeah. So, or does Lucas even know he had it?
So Rafer's in Walker's place. Does CD stop him?
He gets up and he goes in there. Did he have a gun? I think he did. He was ready.
Yeah, I really wanted the standoff between Rafer and CD.
So I thought, okay, CD's going to get beat up because he tends to do that. But no, Rafer jumps out the window or something. He doesn't find the key.
I think we've seen Rafer jump out a window like 4 times in this series.
Yeah.
That's like his thing.
Or through a window. Or
yeah. But yeah, so CD's like, oh, this whole place is messed up. And, you know, the room's trashed and no one's in here. Rafer got away.
Again. He's really good at that. So back on the reservation, Walker and Lucas, they decide to head into medicine country. And Walker's going to take him to Bitter Water, which is where White Eagle used to live. And they're going to confront Lucas's inner demons. Upon deciding that they're going to head into medicine country, Walker and Lucas put on some new togs. Yeah, Lucas, of course, has what you would basically find at, what, like a Davy Crockett souvenir shop?
Exactly.
Yeah, he's a frontiersman.
Yeah, he's got the brown suede with the fringe and all that and the moccasins. He's ready to go. He's just missing a coonskin cap. And what is Walker wearing? How would you guys describe this?
I had a lot of
this?
Questions on this.
It's like a Japanese Native American garb, right?
It was like a gi.
It kind of looks like what the Rainbow Warrior was wearing, except it wouldn't pair well with jeans. But his pants, did you notice his pants look like they were shiny black leather pants?
But baggy, though, weren't they? They weren't like tight leather. It was weird. Right.
But yeah, so anyway, Sam Coyote sends the two of them off in their ridiculous garb to go see White Eagle, who we don't know, or like the medicine country, White Eagle. Okay, this
we
should
just
be
kind
interesting.
Of assumed White Eagle's dead because that was a long time ago. And, you know, so Walker and Lucas, they get to Bitter Water, which is the campsite by the river, and that's where White Eagle used to hang out. And they're like, all right, let's set up camp. And then around the campfire, you know, they have a little heart-to-heart, and they see some shooting stars and make some wishes. And Walker tries to get Lucas to open up, but Lucas shuts down immediately and doesn't want to talk about his dreams. So, you know, they go to sleep, and Lucas has another one of his trippy dreams. And there's a lot of Rafer Cobb coming out of nowhere and having red strobe lights shown on him and weird camera angles of him screaming like the boogeyman.
It was pretty awesome. This stuff was
completely over the top. And so Lucas wakes up screaming, and before Walker can comfort him, Lucas runs off into the woods, and he gets smothered by an adult. And we're like, oh no, what's going on?
Yeah, is it Rafer Cobb, and right. he found him?
How did he find them? By Bitterwater.
Yeah, I mean, okay. And
but it's actually White Eagle, and White Eagle is not dead. In fact, White Eagle's just been hanging out in L.A. and getting free shoes. He's got some sick kicks.
What was that story? I was on Mulholland Drive.
Whoa. So
another David Lynch thing?
Yeah, Lynchian reference.
So do you think that actor just had those shoes and wasn't going to wear moccasins, and they had to come up with some sort of story as to why he's wearing black and white Nikes?
Yeah, you couldn't really just let that go.
Yeah. What does Lucas point it out? He goes, why are you wearing sneakers or something? Does he say it?
I think he just brings it up. I think he's like, oh, these shoes are nice, right?
He's got to get out in front of it, you know?
Yeah.
Right. So he basically tells Lucas that Lucas has a lot of the same fears that Walker had when Walker was a child, and that Lucas needs to learn that he's not facing his fears alone, and that he has friends with him at all times, including Walker and White Eagle. And they're going to fix the problem the only way they know how. Sweat Lodge.
Yeah. To head to the lodge.
Let's do it. Yeah, so Walker's like, all right, Lucas, you and I are going to make the Sweat Lodge. And White Eagle's like, excellent, I'll go get some firewood and the sweet grass.
I figured he was talking about sweet leaf, if you know what I mean.
He picked some of that up on Mulholland Drive as well.
Yeah, it could very well be the case here.
So, you know, they fashion a small impromptu sweat lodge out of some blankets, and they get down to it. They're all shirtless, sitting around in there, two grown men with a small 7-year-old boy. And, you know, they're steaming it up in there, and not explaining anything to Lucas. He's just sitting there, and like Walker's staring off into nothingness, and Lucas is like, so this is like when they hypnotize people? And Walker's like, sort of. I won't explain it, but sort of. And White Eagle says, hey, you know, let your dream overtake you, and when you do, look for us, because we'll be there, and we're going to help you fight. And this next sequence is one of the most ridiculous things I maybe have ever seen on a Walker episode. They enter the dream realm, and they're like world building at the same time that they're trying to have this whole thing go on.
Right.
It's like, what is happening?
Yeah, it's like, essentially, this is like Freddy Krueger dream world.
Yeah. Lucas is being pursued by Rafer again. And Rafer's mocking him, but it's okay because Lucas rounds the corner and there's White Eagle and Walker to help. And so the three of them start fighting Rafer, but White Eagle lets loose a little bit of exposition, which is, if you die in the dream world, do you die in real life? Did you guys catch that?
Yeah, exactly. Like, of course.
They completely gloss over it, of course, but it's like, what universe have we just stumbled upon?
Yeah, you're just going to like bring this like young kid into this without telling him he's going to die in his dreams?
Just give him a heads up. Be careful, okay?
Yeah. This...
Let us do the work.
But, you know, they try to do the work for Lucas in his dream world, but Walker actually gets knocked to the ground. I think the same thing happens to White Eagle in some fashion, too. And yeah. Lucas is left by himself to face his fear, which is Rafer Cobb. And Lucas, I think he finds like an axe on the ground.
White Eagle gives him not only an axe, but some war paint as well.
Oh, yeah. And while he's doing the world building of telling Lucas that he could die here, he's putting war paint on this kid's face.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
That was a masterstroke, literally.
So Lucas charges at Rafer, and Rafer kind of fades off into obscurity. And at that point, he's conquered his fear. It's no longer a problem.
End of the episode.
If only.
Yeah.
Back in the real world, they congratulate him, and it's all good. And down by the river, Walker confronts his own fears. And you'd think that Walker would just be like, we have to talk about your mother and about you. But instead, he sits there, barely says a word, and Lucas puts it all together.
Yeah.
They've set it up, so Walker's going to tell Lucas he has AIDS. All the groundwork has been laid. A previous episode has been done for this very moment to happen. They both sit down on rocks overlooking the river, and Lucas goes, "Walker, what did my mom really die of?" And Walker goes, "Well, she had AIDS." And then Lucas goes, "Well, if she had it, I must have it too." And then Chuck Norris does not say a word.
He's like, yep.
And then he looks down, and that's it. So really, Walker didn't tell him he had AIDS.
Completely copped out.
It's a good thing that Lucas just immediately got over it.
Yeah, Lucas is like, "Well, that means I'm going to die." And Walker's like, "Yep."
Oh, my God.
Sure does.
It's so like, geez, sad. Dude, you're not pulling your weight here at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Not only that, you got beat up by Rafer Cobb in the dream world, too. So what's happening here?
Yeah, Walker, this is
falling down
on the
job.
I think this whole episode is a dream world.
Yeah, pretty much. So Lucas is like, "It's okay. Just like White Eagle said, it's not when you die, it's how you live that matters." And he's like, he's all good with it. He's fine. He doesn't need any explanation or any comfort from Walker whatsoever. He's just good. Yeah, he just does all the work for Walker, and then they drive back to the ranch. We learn that they were gone for a week, and Alex and Trivette and CD are waiting for them, and they're kind of like, "Oh, welcome back. And Lucas is like, "Guys, it's all good. Walker told me I have AIDS, so we're good. We're cool. You guys don't have to be so careful anymore." So everyone's like, "Well then, okay." And Alex is all like, "Well, all right, let's go in and get you cleaned up." And then, Walker and CD and Trivette have a little catching up, because Walker's been out of the loop for a week, you know. He kind of left CD and Trivette to figure out what was going on. And Trivette's like, "Just so you know, people have seen Cobb around the area for the last few days. He stayed at a hotel, but he escaped before people could get there." And CD's like, "Oh, this might be totally unrelated, but but someone also broke into your house and was looking through Lucas's room a few days ago, too." And they're all like, "Oh, he's looking for something, but what could it be?" It's like, okay, he's been seen within 3 miles of his place. He stayed at a hotel. He's driving the same blue Buick he's been driving since the last episode. We know the license plate numbers. You can find it. This is not difficult.
Yeah, but Walker's not around. It's a little
harder.
He's
also maybe the most distinctive looking human being on Earth.
Yeah.
And while they're talking over that kind of ranger talk, Lucas is hanging out with Alex. Alex is like, "But Lucas, your birthday's coming up, and we should really do a big party for you, you know?" And he's like, "I've never had a birthday party before." And she's like, "Oh, okay, well, we're going to do a great birthday party for you."
"Well, sweetie, we're going to have the birthday party of all birthday parties."
Yes.
"It'll be your best last birthday party. I mean, best birthday party."
Oh, God. So bad. God. Oh, no. Oh, no.
It's really belabored. This whole thing is really awful. So Lucas is like, "Okay, that sounds pretty good, if you say so." The next morning, Lucas doesn't really want to eat his breakfast, and Walker's all like, "Well, what's going on, Lucas?" And he's like, "Well, I saw some people with AIDS on TV, and they were telling people all about it and trying to educate people, and I want to do that." And so now we get a montage of Lucas going around to schools talking about AIDS and telling them all he's got AIDS.
Right. And it's kind of like in keeping with the previous episode where kids were afraid to play with Lucas, you know, because they thought, oh, he had AIDS. We don't want to catch that by just playing with him. So he's going around to schools telling kids, hey, no, you can't catch AIDS from somebody by playing with them. Mm. So he's kind of spreading awareness, and it's a good social message for sure. And yeah, montage ensues. And then
he's made the local media. And again, drawing attention to himself, and Cobb is noticing. We see Cobb exiting a fine establishment.
Like a gentleman's club?
It looked like a I don't know.
Or like a sex shop?
I guess that's what we're supposed to think. But yeah, it was basically just like mannequins in like leather, like lingerie in the front windows. And he's okay. just walking on. So, you know, he's just probably buying some underwear for himself.
Right.
But he sees Lucas in the newspaper and he's all like, "Arr!" And then he runs over to his Buick, which is the same car. They should know the license plate. They should know. They should be able to find this thing.
And it was parked on the main drag.
Yep.
He ran into a guy as he was going back to his car.
Right. Yep.
He made a scene. Yep.
But, you know, it's fine. It's all good.
Yeah. So he knows, oh, Lucas, he's still here. He's in town and I'll be able to track him because he's a public figure now.
Yep. So Lucas has his birthday party and no kids are showing up.
Yeah. It's like the party's supposed to start and CD, Alex, and the whole gang's there ready to celebrate his party. And it's on Walker's ranch. And I mean, Lucas is like, keeps watching the driveway leading up to the ranch and nothing's coming up. And you're like, oh no, like kids are still afraid it because he has AIDS, you know, and they didn't want to show up to his party. And
everyone RSVP'd that they'd be there, Alex said.
Yeah, she throws that in and then we wait another maybe belabored like 60 seconds. And then maybe we wait another belabored 60 seconds.
It's probably only like 10 seconds, but I know felt like an
eternity.
Sure did.
Then we finally see a cavalcade of trucks rolling up to the ranch.
Because everybody drives a truck in Texas.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Well, I mean, I don't know that that's false.
Yeah. And this girl and her father get out, and the father's rocking the most extreme mustache. It's like you carved the tail off a squirrel and pasted it to his face.
It's the Bristlemaster 3000.
He doesn't have to wash any fruit before he eats it. It just scrubs it clean before it gets to his mouth.
It's so good.
It's a functional mustache.
Anyways, he's all like, well, to be honest with you, none of us were really okay with our kids coming here with Lucas, having the age and all.
But it was bad.
The kids. The kids, they told us, you can't get AIDS from just playing and being friends. And, well, we feel like a bunch of big fools, and we're so sorry, and our kids want to play, so we're here now. Where's the free food?
Yeah, but that's pretty much it. And then, like, so they show a bunch of other kids showing up, and then they do a bunch of montages of everyone partying, and then it comes to the point where they're giving Lucas gifts, and he pulls, like, some wrapping paper off of this thing that's taller than he is, and it's like a horse's saddle. And then they put him up on the saddle, and he's like, oh, yeah, this is awesome, oh, yeah. And then Trivette hands him this box that is almost as big as him. Okay?
Yeah, baby.
and he rips off the paper.
Dude, it's like a personal computer. It's the real deal.
Yeah, it's like the CP3 5000 or something like that.
Yeah,
and he's
yeah.
like, oh, it's a computer.
This kid's getting some sweet gifts, considering we don't know how long he's got. You know what I mean? I don't know if I would have dropped that much coin. Knowing that he's only going to be around for...
Bob, that's a real...
I'm just being realistic, okay?
Bob would have just gotten him a bunch of shirts from the mountain.
Oh, yeah. But I would have gotten him at, you know, Ocean State Job Lot.
Yeah, man.
If you read the Gaelic scripture on the shirt every night, you're going to survive.
So, yeah, it's definitely, you know, it's always awkward opening gifts in front of people anyways. But in this case, it was even more awkward because, I don't know, someone else was doing it. So,
well, no, it was awkward that they gave him a personal computer and they made him like be really excited about that. That was weird, right?
I don't know. It was 1996. Like back then, like you could play computer games and stuff.
Yeah, like what? Minesweeper?
Yeah, man.
And Ski? What's that? What was that one called?
Ski Free.
Oh, Ski dude, Free. Yeah. Dude, I want to make a Ski Free movie.
At the end, everyone gets eaten by the monster, right? The snowman.
That's actually a genius idea.
All right, get on that. So, yeah, he got the computer for his birthday with Ski Free loaded onto it already. So it's pretty legit. And so after the birthday, you know, he's exhausted. So he goes to bed. And Rafer visits Walker's ranch again. This time, extra bold because Walker's actually there.
Yeah, like he was like, oh, I got in the house the first time with no problem. I'll do it again. I'm like, dude, no. This does not seem like it should have been able to happen. Walker's there asleep, and Rafer is literally able to break into Walker's house without Walker knowing, sneak into Lucas's room, grab Lucas by the neck, and say, hey, where's the key to my safe deposit box, kid? But Lucas, you know, you would think he'd be afraid and he would be like screaming, Walker, come save me, come save me. But he's conquered his fear. So instead of calling like for Walker to save him, he just laughs in Rafer's face. And Rafer's like, you're not afraid anymore. You're a little man now, huh? I knew you've got a key around here somewhere. And then Rafer realizes, he goes, oh, this wasn't here before, which was the picture of his mom and Lucas together. Maybe he took that on vacation with him with Walker. Oh,
Lucas takes it everywhere he goes. Yeah.
Yeah. So apparently that's why he wasn't able to find the safe deposit key, because it was in the picture frame. So Rafer's like, oh, I need that frame. And Lucas grabs it, runs out into the middle of Walker's house, causes a stir. And this is what we show up to watch Walker, Texas Ranger for here.
And before we jump into this, are we really supposed to believe that Lucas's crack fiend mother, who was had no sense of self-awareness and who allowed her son to be like locked in a room with no bathroom for days on end, had the foresight to put the key to a safe deposit box and the code on a picture that she gave to her son that he always held? There's no way she did that.
Yeah, it's like she literally was putting a target on her son's back twice.
Yeah. So Adam's absolutely right. This is what we came to watch this episode for. It's the epic showdown.
Yeah. And so we finally get Walker just waking up. So this gives them the opportunity to have him shirtless, which they like to do whenever they can. They already did that once when he was in the sweat lodge this episode. So
when you say they like to do that, do you mean you like when they do that? Is that what you're saying?
I don't not like it.
Okay. Just want to clarify that. Rafer is, this guy does not look like he can fight.
No, he's really good at jumping out of windows. That's his thing.
Yeah. But fighting, not so much.
His face does most of the work. He looks like just an evil dude. And the way he says the lines.
And he refers to himself in the third person, too, a few times.
Yeah, so. He does. Yep. Rafer Cobb.
Yeah.
So they have the confrontation that we've all been waiting for. But Rafer is pretty much just good at taking a bunch of kicks. And he takes quite the blazing salvo of roundhouse kicks here. It is one after the other here. The first half of which is for Lucas, which we're told.
One or two roundhouse kicks on Rafer Cobb in a tribute to Lucas. They're also like played from multiple angles and replayed. So Evan, I'm curious to hear your roundhouse count for this episode.
Yeah, the final number on this one is 9. And that that final scene had, I think, 7 of those 9. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, him calling out what the kicks are for, like Walker's equivalent of Babe Ruth pointing to the right field stands before hitting a home run.
Exactly. Just,
you know what the end result's going to be. It's going to be a knockout, but we know what his intentions were.
Yeah. And so he goes, this one's for Lucas, and then just whoosh, whoosh. And then he goes, and this one's for me.
Yeah, the classic. You got to do that.
Yeah, he just totally wastes Rafer. And Lucas's photo had fallen on the ground upside down, and Walker's like, oh, there's a key and a thing written on the back, and this must be what he was after. He's like, come on, Lucas, let's go. And they just leave Rafer just like lying on the floor. And so I kind of expected to be like, well, okay, that key unlocks $500,000. Like, there has to be some sort of happy ending here.
Right. And Walker has started a AIDS foundation and found the cure to AIDS.
Yep.
That's usually how these episodes go.
You look at this clock, you're like, they got to do that in 5 minutes. So that's going to be pretty tough.
They could do that in 2 lines.
It's true. Yeah, they could just easy explain it.
Right, right. You know, the next scene is Walker, Alex, and Lucas coming back to Walker's place, and they're all dressed up, and it's pretty apparent that Lucas just drove the nail in the coffin for Rafer Cobb with his testimony in court. And they very easily could have been like, oh, it was so kind of you to donate the $500,000 to AIDS research or to something. They could have put it in there, but they didn't.
Right. And Walker has also donated his blood for the AIDS research, and it cures AIDS.
Clearly it doesn't, because Lucas comes down with a little sniffles there, and then next thing we know, they're at Lucas's funeral.
Yeah.
And they just like, they're like Walker on a shakedown. They punch you in the gut first, and then they roundhouse kick you in the face.
So Walker is delivering the eulogy for Lucas over his grave, and we knew that Lucas was going to die because, dude, they're not going to have Walker have a kid for the rest of the series. No.
At this point, I think he'd already been in Forrest Gump. You know, he probably was in demand as a child actor. He was good. And he ended up being The Sixth Sense. So, yeah, he's not going to have a recurring role on Walker, Texas Ranger.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Both of these episodes are really sad. The subject matter is very serious, and Haley Joel Osment does an amazing job acting. He's, like, really good, and obviously he was a very popular actor, and he was really adorable, too. So, like, for this to be happening to him and for him to be, like, victimized by this really awful-looking dude and all that, it's, like, it's pretty sad.
Right. And when we had the awesome opportunity to talk with Mignon, the script supervisor on this episode, she said that they kept it a really small crew for filming this episode because it was a serious topic and Chuck really wanted to take it seriously. He didn't want to look like an idiot when he was trying to take on like a serious subject. And there was a lot of back and forth with Haley Joel Osment's parents as well because they wanted it to be a serious thing.
But in the end...
yeah, in the
it's only,
end...
It's only as good as the sum of its parts. And in this case, Chuck Norris is not particularly good at delivering fake eulogies for seven-year-old AIDS victims.
Exactly. This is where the rubber hits the road here. So they have this huge setup, and it's all to set up Chuck Norris delivering a eulogy at his funeral. And we see Chuck Norris employ a number of techniques for acting sad on film.
Yeah, the between the eyebrow pinch.
Right.
The mouth rub.
And then just pulling his hand over his face in random configurations as if to hold himself together. But, I mean, he's Chuck Norris. He's together all the time.
He can't cry.
No. His face is granite.
And he just kind of like mutters a few things. And like if you were actually at that service, you wouldn't have heard a single word he said. And then it zooms in on a photograph of him on the coffin where he's next to the horse in his cowboy hat.
Little Ranger?
Little Ranger.
And they fade to black, and it's the encore performance of Rose in December.
Oh, yeah.
It was a song from last week's episode. But I think they played the intro to this throughout the episode.
It was sneaking in there, yeah.
Yeah, and every time they started playing the intro, I was like, I thought it sounded like, I'm sailing away. What's that song?
That's Styx.
Yeah.
Come Sail Away by Styx.
Yeah, it sounded like every time I heard that going on, I thought it sounded like Come Sail Away by Styx.
It's a ripoff of Ave Maria is what it is.
Yeah, I hear that too.
And, you know, that pretty much sums up this episode. We'd love to give a shout-out to our friend and collaborator, Adam Lauritsen, who's been drawing the amazing Walkerstrations on our social media. Be sure to check out his other art on Instagram at @ImaginationRunAmok. When we come back, it'll be time for us to each rate Lucas Part 2 on a scale of 0 to 10 boots to the face, resulting in our patented Roundhouse Roulette episode ranking, the complete results of which are available on our website, roundhouseroulette.com. Don't go away.
This way, little Evan.
What are we doing next to this steaming tent?
Now that we've removed your rat tail, it's time for you to also conquer your inner demons.
You mean my persisting nightmare of giant rats chasing me to my death?
Precisely. Now, Totally White Eagle is waiting for us in the sweat lodge to guide your spiritual journey. Let's go inside.
Oh, hi, Ranger Bob. I see you've brought little visitor with you.
Yes, Totally White Eagle. Can you help us conquer his night terrors?
Is he Native American?
Oh, no, but I play them on podcasts. Speaking of which, we here at Roundhouse Roulette have pledged to deliver the light of Walker, Texas Ranger to the world. If you'd like to join us on that mission, please share the pod with a friend or leave us a kind review on Apple Podcasts. It truly helps other Walkerites find the cast. And if by any coincidence you're looking to update your closet and or sweat lodge, we've recently added some fresh merch at roundhouseroulette.com. Or become a full-fledged ranger or criminal mastermind on our Patreon page.
Most importantly, though, we thank you for listening and joining the party.
Totally White Eagle. Ranger Bob has gone into a trance.
Going under. Rats in the cellar. Going under. Skin's turning yeller. Nose is runny. Losing my connection. Losing money. Getting no affection.
Oh, no. He started zoning out during my advertisement, and your rat nightmare hellscape is transferred into his psyche.
New York City blues.
Why is he singing?
Quiet. There's only one way out of this. Did you bring your rat tail with you?
Yes. Why?
Quickly, throw it on the flame.
Whoa, that was weird. I was trapped listening to Aerosmith play Rats in a Cellar. In a cellar. Oh, and the band. They were all rats. And I looked down at my hands, and I too was a rat.
Oh my, that's horrible. You know what? I don't think I'm even afraid of rats anymore.
Well, geez. I'd call the Sweat Lodge exorcism a great success. Let's get these folks back to the show.
Welcome back. Well, I'm glad I don't have to go first this time.
This episode is kind of a legendary Walker Texas Ranger episode, being that it was lampooned on Conan O'Brien and has since received legendary status. Even when the execution is ham-handed, the earnestness of the attempt is somehow endearing. And it's kind of like somebody at a funeral, and they choose the funeral is the time that they're going to propose to their date. You know, it's like the intention is right, but it just might not be the proper venue. How's that for a elaborate metaphor?
That's pretty good.
All right, here's my point. I'm gonna wrap this up here.
Please.
I'd wager that without Walker Texas Ranger's attempts at changing the world via roundhouse kick, we wouldn't still be talking about this show today. All that said, the name of our podcast is Roundhouse Roulette, and we are here to see the most outrageous episode as far as action, as far as roundhouse kicks, car chases, explosions. And although Lucas Part 1 and Part 2, it's in the DNA of the show, it doesn't gel with our podcast here. You know, and some people out there may totally disagree with our podcast and the way we, the prism with which we look at this show.
And they'd be wrong.
I mean, we would say that, but maybe
they would be wrong.
Although I see what they were doing, and, you know, I'm glad they brought awareness to AIDS, this wouldn't be a series of episodes I recommended to a newcomer to Walker Texas Ranger who is looking to get their mind rocked by the awesomeness of Walker. So by that measure, I've got to give this the same rating I gave it last week, a 2. I'm sorry, Lucas.
Boy, all that talk and you just gave it a 2?
Yeah, now you're justifying a higher rating.
Yeah, I thought so too.
All right, so I give a 3 less to the first part of this episode. And I think part of that was just really hoping that the next one was going to be better. But I should have known, just based on the story and where it was going, that we weren't going to get a whole lot of like classic Walker stuff. And that turned out to be the case from my point of view. This really didn't do much.
Yeah, I mean, if the three of us got together to watch 2 episodes of Walker and we watched these 2, I would be severely disappointed.
Right, right. I'm going to stick with you on this one, Adam. I'm going to go 2.
Man, guys, I was hoping you guys would go a bit higher on this one. You know, as painstakingly dumb as the premise of, like, Walker saving a, you know, like, helping a child with AIDS and helping him cope with his loss through Native American spiritualism. I mean, this episode smacks of classic Walker tropes of cultural appropriation. He has Walker sense where he hears a wolf howl and envisions a man who he thought was dead, but then meets him in the woods for an impromptu sweat lodge sesh where they enter the dream realm and fight a bad guy.
When you put it that way.
Yeah, you're making a pretty good case. Okay.
And then in the end, when he has the face off with the guy, he gives him like a million roundhouse kicks. I mean, it's...
Yeah, but like I said, he's treading water, dude. He's treading water, trying to keep people's attention. Like, it's too late. Those kicks came too late, bro.
I mean, I won't disagree with you there in that, like, anyone who turned this episode on and realized that it was Walker placating to a 7-year-old child with AIDS would have turned it off immediately, and they would have been wise to do so. Unfortunately, I did not have the option because I have to rate it. But that said, I think this episode is a vast improvement from last episode, where the action was total throwaway, whereas in this one, at least Walker's fighting the main bad guy twice, and in one of them, it's in, like, a complete ridiculous, like, that has to be one of the weirdest fights in all of Walker.
But Walker, got beat in the dreamscape, dude.
I don't care. That's in a dreamscape with, like, it's so weird, man. Yeah. Well, I mean, that said, last episode had, like, a couple roundhouse kicks. This one had 10. Again, in this entire series, these two episodes, there have been zero explosions and zero vehicle chases. But, like, the Walker cultural appropriation is so flagrant in this episode. It's, like, it's insane. I gotta give this one a 4. I do think it's twice as good as the last episode, which is saying very little. Also, bird sounds on point. Come on now.
No one cares. No one cares about that.
I do.
Okay.
But you're right. No one else does. All right. So that gives this episode a roundhouse rating of 2.666 boots to the face. And I think we can all agree that those expecting to tune into a normal episode of Walker on October 19th, 1997, were pretty disappointed. But please let us know what you think on social media or by emailing us at roundhouseroulette@gmail.com. When we come back, we'll finally spin that roundhouse roulette wheel again and select next week's episode. And we're back. Bob, you ready to spin that wheel?
Let's do this.
You know,
Saturday night.
I was thinking the other day, whatever happened to Gage and Sydney? We haven't seen them in a long time.
Yeah.
It's been too long.
And now I think we're going to be thrown right back into that, and
I'm kind of excited for it. I'm really kind of I'm liking the jumping around, actually, in that regard. Season 9, episode 14, Saturday Night. Walker and the gang go undercover to help a local nightclub owner who is being pressured to launder money for the mafia. Oh no! No way!
Yes,
Frank Stallone guest stars.
Nice.
Well, we hope you'll join us next week when we share our reactions to Season 9, Episode 14, Saturday Night. In the meantime, share your opinions with us on Facebook and on Instagram at Roundhouse Roulette and on Twitter at Roundhouse Pod. And rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your fine podcasts. Thank you for listening, and until next week,
may the eyes of the Ranger be upon you. When your Texas look behind you,
where the Ranger's gonna be.